Are you thinking about starting your own cash practice? Maybe you've already started your own practice and you're starting to realize that there's a lot to learn when it comes to business. We can be great clinicians, but if we don't understand the business side of having our own practice, we're going to have a hard time being successful in business. Guys, I wrote a book for you and I took everything that I've learned over the last 5 years of running a successful cash practice here in Atlanta, and I put it in this book, and I gave you everything that you need to be able to start and scale that practice past yourself. That book is called Fuck Insurance, and if you don't like the title, the book is not for you. If you do like the title, it's the exact book that you need to be reading right now. I show you exactly how to start. I show you what's important when it comes to marketing, when it comes to sales, when it comes to operations, and what stage you're actually at in the business, you know, where you're at, what you need to focus on while you're there, and how to get to the next stage. I'm trying to set it up in a way where you can get some clarity in your business. And the book for now is 100% free. All you have to do is go to finsurancebook.com. That's finsurancebook.com and get your free copy of the book that I wrote specifically to help you be successful in business. The book is free. All you got to do is pay for it to get to your door so that I don't lose my shirt on giving everybody all these books and sending them around the world. And again, head to finsurancebook.com. Learn how to run a successful cash practice today. So here's the question. How do physical therapists like us, who don't want to see 30 patients a day, who don't want to work home health, and have real student loans, create a career and life for ourselves that we've always dreamed about? This is the question, and this podcast is the answer. My name is Danny Matei, and welcome to the PT Entrepreneur Podcast. Hey, what's going on, guys? Danny here with the PT Entrepreneur Podcast, and it's Tuesday. I appreciate you tuning in again, catching up on your business knowledge. I've got some really cool stuff to share with you guys today. We just had our staff retreat last week, and I want to talk about the three big takeaways that I have from the time that I got to spend, with our staff outside of the office in a really cool location, doing some really fun stuff, and give you an idea why, you know, an event like this, which is it's a financial but also time cost for our whole company, why it's so important, and why we do it every year. So let me give a little context to this. So our staff, we took everyone out to a place called Serenby, and for those of you that are in Atlanta, maybe you've heard of this place. If you're not in Atlanta, you should check this place out. It's really interesting. So basically, from the story that I heard about how it started, there was a guy that was a really successful restaurateur in Atlanta, and he used to he bought a farm south of Atlanta where Serenby is. Just like, I guess, it had a couple acres, and it was like an old farmhouse that he renovated, and then he liked going there so much that he bought 1,500 acres of land all around this this farmhouse, and decided that he wanted to build this upscale sort of retreat for people. That's sort of like a farm, and then healthy living, and there's animals, and there's, you know, all kinds of, you know, equestrian events, and just ton of activities out there. They have like a playhouse and multiple restaurants and coffee shops and artists that are local there and musicians. And it's just like, I don't know the best way to describe it. It's kind of a hodgepodge of, more cultured than I am, and more wealthy than I am. But also mixed with a farm. So imagine this, I guess the best way to describe it is like if Joanna Gaines had 1,500 acres and an unlimited development budget, she would build this place. So take a look at it. It's really interesting. But what we did was, you can do corporate events out there. So we had a small office space that we had for our conference space, I should say, for our staff. So we got out there on Thursday morning, and we went over a bunch of stuff for our fourth quarter, in particular a reactivation campaign that we do every year, and getting all that stuff teed up all day Thursday until about, guess it was probably around like 4 o'clock. And then we went over to where we were staying, and it was really cool because it was actually a renovated like guest house, I guess, that is connected to the pool area. And there really wasn't anybody out there because it's Thursday. It's like middle of the, you know, week, not in the summer. So it was just us. We had this whole like pool area and like hot tub and guest house all to ourselves. And yeah, man, we hung out in the pool. We got a chance to just chill out for a while. And then we took everybody to this this private cooking lesson, which was the highlight of our trip. Honestly, I've never done anything like this, but the guy that we had was awesome. His name was Patty, chef out there. And he taught us how to make some really great stuff. The food was amazing. They actually grow all the produce that they have at the restaurants, or most of the produce they have at the restaurants, on the farm. So they had all that. They had like some, you know, grass-fed beef that he had sous vide, and we basically like finished it in a cast iron skillet. Like, I don't even know much about that stuff before this, but it was awesome. I definitely feel like I need to get a sous vide after this. If you guys are into cooking, you probably know what I'm talking about, but it was great. And more than anything, what was awesome about it was we had an opportunity. Yeah, we did structured work and we got a chance to really delve into some things that we needed to, but more than anything, we got a chance to take a step back. We got a chance to plan things together, get on the same page together, and really spend some fun time together. And one of the things that is so great about, you know, the fact that we've been able to start a business is we get to pick who we want to employ. And it's really based off of what's a cultural fit for us. And I'll get into some of this with my three big takeaways, but everybody that we work with shares a lot of common values that we have. They're funny, you know, they're just good people. And, you know, just being able to interact with them and do something with them that maybe they wouldn't do for themselves is kind of a big kind of splurge thing. If you were to go do that, you know, by yourself, just the event alone was $2,000 for us to get everybody out there for, you know, just the cost of like the hotels and the food and the conference room, and not to include the lost revenue from not having patient volume. And that's fine with us because it's so important for us to be on the same page and have, you know, a cohesive team that feels like we, you know, there's more to it than just revenue. And there really is. Like, I think you can't fake that. And it's something that people know one way or other. Like, if it's just all about business, is you're not going to keep people around very, very well. And you know, they don't really feel like they're a part of anything. And when you get a chance to interact with people and just, you know, have fun and be able to share some cool experiences with each other, that's what really I think is one of the coolest parts about us being able to employ other people and grow our business past just myself, you know, and Ashley. And so anyway, I'm going to get into these three big takeaways that we had, or that I had, I guess, just say from this live event that we did with this retreat. So number one is culture cannot be faked. So I hear a lot of companies talk about like culture, and culture is this sort of, I guess, I see it sort of as like a vague thing where people can say they have a really good culture, but when you step into a business and you see how people interact with each other, you can tell if they have a really good culture or not. And culture to me is really just, you know, how well people live the values of what was defined by the founders. Because once you start bringing other people on, if they don't have a compass of what is important to that company, they don't really know the best way to make decisions. And decisions have to be made based on core values in the company that defines the culture. And this is a really hard thing to do early on. You know, we have redone our core values twice. And the first time we did it, it was just me and Ashley. And, you know, we had a strong idea of like what we wanted our company to be, but we didn't really know until we brought other people into the mix. And we actually had our staff sit down and redo them with us. So, you know, we felt like we're on the same page with them. And it's something that it just has to be lived every day. It has to be a part of what you guys do. It has to be a part of how you make decisions. It has to be a part of things that you do when you're not at work. You know, like for us, a big one for us is to deliver more than expected, you know, and that means a lot of things. That's very vague, right? But like going above and beyond and even owning up to mistakes. You know, I made a mistake with a patient recently where I used his name in something that I shouldn't have. And he was kind of upset about it. And I called him as soon as I could. I apologized. You know, I didn't try to act like it was miscommunication. It was 100% my fault. You know, I called him as soon as he emailed me. And I think for a lot of people, they avoid discomfort of something like that. And for sure, don't get me wrong, it is uncomfortable to have to admit that you're wrong about something, truly, you know, being wrong and be sorry about that. But people understand that people make mistakes sometimes. And if you own up to it, the likelihood of that festering and becoming a bigger problem goes away. It's also just the right thing to do, frankly. And I think that's probably the most important thing is, what do you do when people aren't looking, you know? And culture for us really is leading from the front. You know, it's making decisions based on the things that we find important that we tell other people to do in order to help with alleviation of pain and getting back to activities and workouts and functional living that they want to be able to do. And what I mean by this is, and look, I've kind of gotten in trouble for saying stuff like this in the past about our profession and the health decisions that people make, but I really feel like PTs, clinicians in general, like we should be leading from the front. I don't think anybody will disagree with me on this. It's just a matter of not everybody's willing to do this. And it frustrates me, but I do get it, right? I mean, there's a lot of reasons why people have poor health decisions. And I'm by no means, you know, a saint when it comes to this stuff. Like, dude, I took my daughter to McDonald's the other day because she begged me for a Happy Meal. And it's something we do occasionally that's, you know, just a fun thing. Jack and Ashley had gone somewhere else. And every time that they do this, which is kind of rare, we go to McDonald's and it's like a little treat thing. And I tell you what, I felt like dog shit afterward. I had a headache. Maggie's laughing while she's eating these chicken nuggets. And I knew, I was like, this is going to suck. You know, in terms of how I feel and it is what it is. It's an occasional thing that we do, you know, like we don't eat dessert every night. I hardly drink. Like these are just things that, we don't do much of, right? We try to eat healthy 80% of the time. The other 20% of the time we eat like dumbasses and we exercise regularly, but not to a point where it becomes our life, right? Like just finding balance in that is, I think, what is important. It doesn't have to be anything crazy. But in our profession, like the idea that you can just be unhealthy yourself and then tell people to make these health decisions that habitually are hard to change is very hypocritical and not something that we allow within our organization. Like you cannot do that. If we feel like you are just, you know, not leading from the front, you're standing there telling people to do things that you're not willing to do yourself, you're not going to last within our company. It's just not a core tenet of ours. And this idea of leading from the front is something that I picked up when I was in the Army. And I feel like Ashley and I, we have to do it even more so because we have staff that looks to us as well, right? Like if I'm not willing to own up to a mistake or go the extra mile for a patient, what makes them think they should do that, right? Like I just think that it has to be something that you do both in how you interact with people in your business and personally, because in particular, when we ask people to make these difficult decisions in terms of eating better, moving more, you know, sleeping more, managing stress better, and we are bad about it ourselves, we feel that internally. It's not authentic. People can tell as well, right? And I'm like, I would get this even when I would teach for mobility bot. I'd be talking to people about squatting. Right? Dude, I weigh 175. I'm fucking tall and skinny, right? And I've multiple times had people like, ask me, why are you really a strength coach? It's like, well, what does that mean? Right. I mean, I have a ton of education in that. I've worked with a lot of people in a strength and conditioning setting, you know, between military special operations groups, professional teams, division one teams. I for sure have the pedigree to do that. Now, do I look like a college strength coach that's going to be deadlifting 600 pounds? No. Not at all. And the first thing that I do whenever I teach a course with a bunch of strength coaches that are looking at me that way is I bring that up and I diffuse the situation right away. I'll say, listen, guys, like, I get it. I'm not going to come in here and deadlift 600 pounds. Like, don't expect that to happen. And position myself in a way where I'm not trying to position or posture in a way where I need to do that. But I know some things that can help these people get better results with their athletes, you know, and ways to get better compliance and buy-in and organization of things and looking at things that may be causing, you know, injuries based on the methodology that we teach that I learned from, you know, Kelly Starrett. So, when you find yourself in a position like that, you know, you have to just be okay with owning up to that, you know, and also I do train, right? But like, it's just the way that I train. I'm not training to be 200 pounds anymore like I was in the military. I felt like dog shit and I was eating all the time. It was like a part-time job, not my thing. And so I think you don't have to be, looking like you're going to the CrossFit games to have credibility with people. But if you are honestly just not taking care of yourself and then you turn around and ask people to do the same thing, you know, in terms of making these difficult decisions, you lose so much credibility. And I think it's a huge issue in healthcare in general. You know, telling people to stop smoking and then over your break, you're out in the parking lot smoking. I mean, I think we can all agree that that's not a good thing, whether you like it or not, or whether you dislike what I have to say. And there's definitely people that have, diseases, they have pathology. I'm not talking about that. That is a small sliver of the people out there that are just not taking care of themselves and then telling other people to make better decisions. If you're not doing it yourself, you have no right to tell anybody else to do the same thing. And this is a big part of our culture. Like, we all train, you know, we all are healthy. You watch us eat lunch and it's all healthy food for the most part, unless it's like something random that we're bringing in on a day where we have like a staff meeting, but even still it's like Chipotle or something like that, you know? So I think that, part of your culture has to be, you know, leading from the front and being an example, because if you're not, people will not take you credibly. So that's number one. Number two, fun is just as important as hard work. So this is something that when I was in the Army, they used to, you know, make us do all kinds of events and, you know, whether it's like hail and farewell dinners or balls or, you know, going to, you know, the Winter Wonderland ball or, you know, whatever other thing was like organized fun that everybody was supposed to do, but it never was very fun. Like, it just was always kind of lame and nobody really wanted to go to these things. And it was sort of, it's just sort of weird. Like, you don't really want to have like a great time or like show your like personal side to your business, you know, colleagues within that context, in the military in particular. And I never really enjoyed any of those things that we had to do. It was like, you know, mandatory fun is what we would call it. But I mean, for us, we always wanted to be able to actually have fun and have our company support our, you know, us and our staff getting to do cool shit together. And going to a place like this, you know, and being able to even take our staff, you know, to a dinner like we did, was a lot of fun. It had nothing to do with business. We didn't talk about business at all. In fact, it was just like some random ass conversations the whole time about like fantasy football and about this, you know, talking to this chef about how the hell he got from Syracuse, New York down to Palmetto, Georgia, you know, and teaching cooking classes. It was a blast. And that cohesion we get from us being able to know each other on a deeper level in our company, I think is incredibly important. In any small business, I think it's very, very important because they're not a number. This isn't just like when I was in the military, I was one of who knows how many captains, right? I was one of who knows how many physical therapists, you know, even a smaller niche within that. And for small businesses, especially service-based businesses like ours, those people, you work together in a very close manner, and it's super important to know more about those people than you would in a government environment. You want to know their backstories too, right? Like, you know, just, we learned something about our office manager that she worked on a blueberry co-op or some crap. Like, it was called Blueberry Field, some co-op up in like New Hampshire. And we're all laughing about it because it makes sense. She looks like somebody that would have worked at a co-op. She you know, she did some fun stuff, interesting stuff before she started working, you know, with us. And it's just funny to hear some of the things that, you know, Claire has done previously. And it just, you know, makes her more well-rounded. It makes us like her more, makes us, you know, just want to be more of a part of her life. And same with us, and for them to learn things about us, you know, that are just sort of, you know, just deeper friendships that we're developing with staff. I don't look at it like employees. I'll never say that somebody works for me. I think that's just like a terrible way to phrase it. You know, we work together. We're on the same team. You know, we all have different roles, and some of us have taken on more risk than others, and that just puts us in different places. But we all work together, and we have to be able to help each other out. And the more that we know, like, and trust each other, the more likely it is that we're willing to go the extra mile to actually help each other out. And when we look at what's best for our patients, we have to pull it back to this, right? Like, as I told them at our staff retreat, I said, look, I don't pay you, you know, like, I'm not the one that pays your salaries and your benefits. Like, our patients are the ones that pay your salary and your benefits. They're the ones that are the reason why you have a job here, you know, and why we have a company. And let's not forget how important that is. And when somebody reaches out to us for help and they email us, you know, about, or if they're doing an exercise correctly, we can either think to ourselves, oh man, this guy's a pain in my ass because he's asking questions. Or we can say, how fucking fortunate are we that we have people that we work with that are willing to reach out to us because they want to make sure they're doing some homework exercises right. I mean, how many of you work at clinics where there's people that don't do anything you say? I remember being in the military asking people to demonstrate their homework exercises, and half the time they came up with some bastardized version of some shit that I never showed them, and then finally fessed up to the fact that they didn't do anything that I told them to. A lack of compliance in an environment like that where there's no skin in the game, it's a socialized medical system, not paying anything. Lack of compliance is a terrible problem. It's so hard to get people motivated to take care of themselves in that context. And for us to complain about somebody reaching out to us, you know, like, some of our patients will take a video of themselves, send it to us, and make sure, like, they want us to break it down and break down their form, and they want to see if they're doing it right. I mean, that is the dream. That's the dream client, the people that you know are going to get better because they're actively investing in their results with time and with energy and focusing on the right things and changing the wrong things. And that's what we have to look at, you know, the way that we have to look at this. And, you know, as we work together, as we develop better cohesion with our team, it's all so that we can help get better results for the people that pay us, for the people that allow us to have a company. And when you look at it that way, it changes a lot. It changes a ton in terms of how you feel when somebody asks for help, you know, versus looking at it as a burden. We look at it as, man, how fortunate are we to put ourselves in a position that many other providers would kill for, to have people as invested in the result that we want them to get as we are. And I think that's a very, very rare thing. All right, number three, we have to constantly remind people what bus they're on and where it's going. And excuse me, what I mean by this is, it's our staff. It's not patients. It's, I guess you could say that in a different context, but for our staff to know and have clear communication about what we're doing with our company, where they fit, where we see them going, is very, very important. Because, you know, this idea of, okay, what bus am I getting on and where is it going? Do I want to be on this bus and do I want to go to this place, or do I want to be on a different bus and I want to go to a separate, you know, place? This isn't the right place for me, or it's not going to the right spot. And clear communication is incredibly important, because if you don't have ongoing clear communication and almost to an exhaustive level, because people are busy. People forget. People will fill in the gaps with what they think is happening, not what is actually the intentions of, you know, the people that run the company usually. And when people have, you know, clear communication and they know what the mission is and they're a part of something bigger than them, you know, they're a part of something that is a driving factor, a cause that they want to associate themselves with, they will work very hard towards that, because it means more than money. It means more than benefits. It means more than a lot of things. And for us, with our company, what we're trying to do is prove that this performance PT model does not have to be dependent on insurance, is able to scale past just one provider, to provide amazing jobs for our peers and break the mold on that, so that we can then teach other people how to do the same thing. And instead of students coming out of school and having one choice, you know, or a couple choice, I say none are any good. Go work for a high volume clinic and get paid like crap. Go take a home health job and help people get off bedside commodes and make decent money. Go take a travel PT job and move from one little podunk town to another where you're there for a reason, because nobody else wants to be there and nobody else wants to be in this position, and make decent money there as well. I don't know about you guys, but I didn't go to school for any of those options. I went to school to be an autonomous provider that could help people solve complex problems and use my skill set as a strength and conditioning background that just happened to go back to PT school to learn how to affect pain, but really solve long-term problems through effective utilization of movement, both strength and mobility, control, motor control, whatever you want to call it, through basic strength and conditioning principles to help them move well, be active for life, and get back to the things that they love, you know, and enjoying their time actively while they're here. Like, that is what we want. And we want to be able to show that it is possible and start to change that option. Instead of, I only have these three shitty options, now all of a sudden it's like, I have this other option. I can either align myself with a clinic that's doing this, that's grown to a point where they can bring me on, or I can figure out how to do this on my own, you know, and have my own practice if that's what you want to do. Not everybody fits into that. Look, I can tell you as a business owner, there's certain days I wish I didn't have a business, for sure. The stress is real. It doesn't fucking go away. You solve problems and then bigger problems basically appear because you've then grown and you learn how to deal with them better. But I'm telling you, it's not for everybody. It's not the easy path. It's the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. And for people to think that they can just throw a sign up on a door and all of a sudden they have a business and a practice that's functional, it doesn't work that way. And those of you that are doing it right now, you know what I'm talking about. And no amount of listening to me can ever describe to you what that feels like. And the stress associated with that sometimes is just something that many people do not want and they fold under. You know, I there's no other way for me. I'm chronically unemployable. I'll be an entrepreneur and self-employed for the rest of my life. There's no doubt. I would be a shitty employee. I would get fired quickly. And for us, as we drive towards trying to show that this works, and we have in many ways, we've shown that we've grown past ourselves multiple times, employed people that have great positions, and we want to make them even better. And for our staff to know, this is the goal. You're a part of this. You have a direct stake in the changing of our profession. For many of our peers who are in school right now or younger practitioners that don't want those other options, like they know where they're going. They know what they're a part of. And it's big, it's important. It's something that is very important to us to be able to prove and to show and to share with how this works, you know, and help our peers have better options going forward. I'll give you a really good example. I was at a school recently. I got asked to come in as a guest for a Q&A at this private school that is primarily focused on entrepreneurship, but they have like a strong kind of civic, I guess like political kind of section to it as well, kind of learning about public service and, but it's heavily entrepreneur based. And so they had me come in and do a Q&A, and it was me and a couple other people. And one of the ladies there, she works for John Lewis, who's a congressman here in Georgia. And John Lewis is very well known in the civil rights movement. He's somebody that at 19, you know, marched with Martin Luther King. He was almost killed multiple times. He was in a bus that was lit on fire. I mean, he's been subjected to some terrible things, and all for, you know, the cause that was so important to him. And this lady that works for him was talking about her position with him. And it was interesting when she described her job, it was actually kind of odd. She gave a lot of details. I mean, even how much money she made. And what she was getting at was, she basically said, look, I make $45,000 working for John Lewis, and I've worked for him for 30 years. And I've been offered positions where, you know, it's well over six figures. They want me to come in and take these whatever executive roles, and I turn them down every time. She's like, look, I'll be with John until he decides he doesn't want to run for office anymore. And it's because she's part of something. She believes in the vision that John had and has about where he wants to see, you know, rights be and position himself in a way to help affect change in politics, you know. And it's very admirable to hear someone like that describe why money is not important to her whatsoever, and why she's so, I guess, behind, you know, a person that she believes in and is a part of something bigger than her. And that will retain talent. That will keep people focused and aligned, really, really smart, good people towards something that's bigger than all of us, you know? And in that case, it's something that was very, very important. And he still has an important role today. And for us, you know, I guess in relative to that, what we do is not nearly as important as the civil rights movement, and I'll never position it as that, but I feel like we have an opportunity to impact our profession in a positive way as well, even though it may not be nearly as important. It is important to me, and it's something that I feel like we have a very unique opportunity to affect change in a positive way within our profession. And as our staff, you know, realizes and they understand that they're a part of that, you know, it's just a way for us to be on the same page, to work towards a common goal, and to see achieve something. You know, hopefully we look back and it's amazing, right? And we are proud of that. We feel like it wasn't just about revenue, you know, it wasn't just about money. It was about impact. It was about doing the right things for other people as well. And people will stay for that. And if they don't know what bus they're on or where it's going, they're going to get off and they're going to want to go somewhere else. And that's not their fault. That's my fault or your fault. If you're, you know, a owner of a business and you have staff, and sometimes you hire the wrong people. This could be a whole nother conversation, you know, but if you get the right people that align with your core values and they leave, it's your fault. Nobody else's. And the breakdown probably is in communicating where you're going and why it's important. Because oftentimes we think, oh, money's the only driver. Money's, at a certain point, money's not. You know, it really isn't. Of course, it's nice to have more money, but people want to actually help others, impact others, and be a part of that. So that's the third big takeaway that I have from our staff retreat. So in summary, number one, culture cannot be faked. You have to live it, and it has to be something that you prove every single day. Number two, fun is just as important as hard work when it comes to your company, your staff, taking that time to actually get to know each other on a different level. Decompress is not all about work. It shouldn't all be about work. But being able to enjoy each other in a way that is just honestly like one human to another human, having some fun and experiencing something really cool is just as important as any amount of work that we will do. Number three, you have to constantly remind people what bus they're on and where it's going. And this is really them understanding what the company stands for, what the company's trying to do, what movement are you part of, and why would they want to be around? You know, that will take you a long way. So this is something that I wish I would have known, man, 5 years ago. I hope if you're listening to this and you're thinking to yourself, man, I have a side hustle practice. I'm making like $1,000 a month. I just want more new patients. Cool. There's plenty of shit that I put out about that. Go listen to that. It'll help. But if I could go back, you know, 5 years ago when we started our practice and really delve into some of these things about being clear on, you know, our values and our culture and enjoying the experiences instead of just grinding and working my ass off, it would have been a hell of a lot better, more enjoyable along the way, and probably much, much more productive. So if that's you and you're just getting going and you're just getting started, don't forget about the big picture stuff. Because one day, if you do things right, it's not going to just be you. It's going to be you and other people. And I hope that's the case, because that means our profession is growing. That means the right people are employing the right people. And you understanding your culture and your vision and your mission and other people wanting to be a part of that is going to help you tremendously in your business in many ways, not just revenue wise, but also surrounding yourself by or around with people that are remarkable, you know, that actively want to work with you and turn down positions other places where they can make more money, just like the lady that spoke that works for John Lewis. So keep that in mind. I hope that you guys enjoy this one. I had a great time at our staff retreat. Check out Serenbe if you guys are interested. It's like ultra nice, too nice. I feel like somebody's in there doing something bad, like drowning cats or some shit like that. Some weirdo probably lives there, but it's a very nice place, but almost like creepy nice. But definitely worth checking out if you're in the area. So guys, as always, thanks for listening. Catch you next time. You want more cash PT biz help? If so, go get a copy of my book, Fuck Insurance. It's your playbook to successful performance PT practice and never having to deal with insurance again. You can get a free copy at finsurancebook.com. That's finsurancebook.com. Inside this book, you'll learn the direct techniques that we have used to become one of the fastest 100% cash PT practices in the country.